We're joined this morning by Senator Dick Durbin. Once again, Senator, good to talk to you. How have you been, sir?
I'm good, Tom. I'm healthy, and so is my wife. We're doing our best to get through this like everybody.
Yeah, and you've got another busy day. Can you tell me what's going to be happening this morning at around 10 o'clock? You have a press conference scheduled this morning.
Well, what we're trying to do is to make sure that we're on top of the issues that people really care about. And in this situation, what we're trying to do is to make sure we have COVID relief. We want to make certain that people all across the board, those who are unemployed, get a helping hand. Small businesses get some assistance when it comes to dealing with the problems that they're facing, keeping their employees together and getting ready to reopen. The problem is that we've suspended the conversation about this now, and we're talking instead about filling a Supreme Court vacancy. And it has literally pushed everything else off the table. And that's where we are. So we'll talk about that this morning.
All right. When it comes to the Supreme Court and the nomination and the election year, historically speaking, 14 presidents have appointed 21 justices during the presidential election year. Six of those, lame ducks, fill Supreme Court seats, even though their successors have been elected. So people say it shouldn't be done during the election, but historically it has quite a lot.
Well, it's never been done. We've never approved a nominee for the Supreme Court after July 1st of an election year. Abraham Lincoln, 1864, thought he was going to lose that election. Had a vacancy. The longest-serving Supreme Court Justice, Roger Taney, died. He could have filled the vacancy, as President Trump is attempting to do now. He said, it's not right. We're going to wait until after the election, even if I'm not sure I'm going to win. I think that really gets down to the basics here. To do this in such a hurry, it's a lifetime appointment to the highest court in the land, and to do it and to exclude other things like discussing relief for unemployed people, help with rental payments, all of that, it just seems to me a misplaced priority.
But there have been six, even though there was a successor named, that did it.
Well, you can argue, if you wish, that it happened in some cases, it didn't happen in others. Then take a look at it. Is this the number one priority that your listeners want us to focus on? At this moment in history, you know, since July 31st, we've had people cut off of their federal unemployment assistance. These people are facing a real hardship. We should be working on that. The president said last Tuesday, nope, we're not going to do it. All we're going to do is focus on the Supreme Court nominee. I just think that's a wrong priority at this moment.
You know, when it comes to the argument in D.C. about stimulus and help, the speaker saying we're going to do a big bill or we're not going to do it. And, you know, the idea out of the White House, or at least one of them, was piecemeal, would do something for a $1,200 check, do something for the airlines, do something for the restaurants. Is that possible that a piecemeal effect could win over and get at least some of these things done? When you just outlined the desperation.
Well, we could, of course, but you know, how do you explain it to the other folks who didn't get a helping hand? What we've proposed is $2.2 trillion, huge amount of money. What they've proposed is $1.6 trillion. Does it sound like we're that far apart? I don't think it is. They've cut in half the assistance for state and local governments. Tom, you and I have talked about Williamson County and other places in your listening audience where they're struggling, you know, and they realize that if they don't get a helping hand because of this COVID-19, they're going to have to make cutbacks in firefighters, in policemen, in healthcare workers, and teachers. I mean, that's what's coming up. So to say, well, we'll get back to that later. Why aren't we doing it now? We did it on March 26. We passed the bill 96 to nothing. Democrats and Republicans all agreed on it. We ought to do it again and not waste any time. And to say, well, we're just going to focus on the Supreme Court vacancy instead, I don't think that's a good answer.
You know, when I was looking at the numbers this morning, there are some 31 states, 32, I think, that set single-day records for new cases yesterday.
Well, it just tells you the reality here. This virus is still lurking out there. Williamson County is a high-risk county. For example, 1,500 people have been diagnosed and 55 have died. Jackson County is a little better, but it's hit everybody, and it comes back again. Italy was boasting not that long ago that they finally put an end to a deadly story about virus in Italy. Now it's back. It is a constant battle. And one of the things that your listeners ought to know is wearing a mask is not too much to ask to protect yourself and to protect the people around you. I agree with Dr. Redfield at the Center for Disease Control. We want to break the back of this virus. We've all got to pitch in together. This isn't a political fight. It's a medical emergency, and we've got to pull together on it.
You and I touched across the Supreme Court nomination and that process. What's your opinion of the candidate herself? I mean, she's approved other times for federal courts and things along this line. What is there a problem with Amy Coney Barrett?
Well, she has an approach to deciding cases which is not unique. Anton Scalia had a similar approach called originalism, which I believe, when you play it out, comes up with some very unusual conclusions in terms of where the law will take you. So we're going to ask her about it and have her apply it to issues that really are relevant to people. First and foremost, though, we've got to understand what the timing is on this. The president is determined to get this Supreme Court justice in place before the election. He is very open, Tom, about why he wants that. First, they want to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. 600,000 Illinoisans, 600,000 people living in this state count on it. And every one of us who has a health insurance policy counts on it to make sure there's no discrimination. If somebody in your family has a pre-existing condition, you aren't going to be charged a premium you can't pay just because your son happens to have diabetes or your daughter survived a cancer scare. I mean, that's what the bottom line is. And filling this vacancy before November 3rd by the president is what he said it is. He wants to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. And we're going to ask a lot of questions on that. That's for sure.
Okay. What about packing the court? This term has gained a lot of popularity. Matter of fact, in Google searches, it's one of the top this week and last week, too.
Well, and it's a relevant question, but the interesting part of it is virtually all the discussions outside Washington, there's no committee, there are no secret meetings talking about expanding the size of the Supreme Court. It is a possibility that most people are surprised to learn can be done by statute. The Constitution does not tell us how many people to put on the Supreme Court. The numbers changed. The last time was a long time ago, but the numbers changed over the years. There is no active debate or consideration of that at this moment, I can just tell you. And whether or not it's a possibility in the future remains to be seen.
You know, my next question, final question, is the same one I've asked you every time for the last couple of months, cures money. You know what? The last figure I saw, I believe, was on $1.3 million on Monday had been distributed out of over $200 million.
Well, I'm told that several weeks ago, and you and I have talked about this before, I get in touch with the state and say, what's going on? I'm told that the distribution has taken place. It didn't happen as quickly as we wanted because we had to pass a state law. And we had to make sure that we distributed it properly or the feds would come in and say, give it back. We don't want to go through that mess. And the problem, of course, with it is it doesn't reimburse units of local government for lost revenue. Of course there's lost sales tax revenue. We got businesses all across our state that are shut down or working part-time. The sales tax revenue has been hurt because of COVID-19. I think we need to have help for state and local governments, including the state of Illinois and a lot of local governments. We've got to do it right, Tom. If we distribute this money and the feds come back and say, you did it the wrong way, give it back, it'll be a disaster for a lot of local communities.
What about the accusation that it's a bailout for states that are mismanaged?
Well, you know, there is mismanagement. I mean, across the Illinois River, or probably the Ohio River, in Kentucky, they have a pension problem just like we do. But not a penny of the money that we are trying to get our hands on has to do with curing that pension problem. It isn't a fact of mismanagement that there's a downturn in revenue collected by the states and local governments. We just see it. The economy shrunk because of this COVID-19. So to say because a handful of states may have some pension problems, we're not going to give any state any money, that just isn't fair. We have got to help the local governments. We've got to help our state get through this crisis. The alternative is to lay off a lot of police and firefighters and teachers, and I don't want to do that.
All right, one more question coming from the listeners because I'm seeing it in large numbers. What do you envision as help for restaurants? It's been a big concern here in Southern Illinois. It's an industry that is small mom and pop. How do you envision some type of help for them?
Well, the forgivable loans, first round that we had, I think was the approach. It basically said to them, if you'll put the money into payroll, into paying your mortgage, paying your utility bills, we'll give you a helping hand, and we'll forgive the loans that are given to you for that purpose. I think a second round's needed. We thought 6 months was enough. It wasn't. We at least need to go another 6 months or longer, because many of these, as you just mentioned, are family operations that have been around for generations. And they're really important for our local economy. So when it comes to the small businesses, particularly restaurants, I think we got to stand up and help them through this mess.